Item number four, coming back, into open session. During closed session, direction was given to staff and to legal counsel. No decisions were made. Item number five, I'll turn this over to you, Mimi.
Great, thank you.
His name is Mark. If you're looking for his name, I'm not sure.
Oh, sorry, I didn't have my glasses on. I am very happy to introduce our new Director of Finance and Administration, Mark Matulich. Mark is here with us today for his first board meeting. And Mark is a CPA and a former controller at various places, and has been really diving in with both feet and getting us even closer to completing the 2020-21 audit, and then we're gonna just make some wonderful improvements. So we're really grateful to have Mark on board as part of the team.
Mark, welcome. I don't know if you want to say anything to us. You're probably better off saying it now before you get to know some of us. It'll be more polite, I guess. I don't know.
Thank you very much, and I'm very excited to be here, very happy to work with y'all and keep things moving forward in a positive direction. So thank you.
All right, welcome aboard. Thank you, sir. Item six, consent calendar. Are there any items, I'll ask board members, that we want to pull off consent? Otherwise, I'm going to make a motion for item six to accept the consent calendar. Can I have a second, please?
I'll second.
Thank you, Director Butler. Roll part, call Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Jacob.
Aye.
Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Paul.
Aye.
Thank you.
Item number seven, General Manager's Report. Mimi, please.
Great, thank you. I just feel a little off kilter today. My placement here, hold on one sec. Okay. We've been working on our customer service improvements. We hosted another six training sessions in October to demonstrate the new billing website and to assist customers with the transition to automated bank draft bill payment. The new website allows customer to see their bill history, track payments, and see water usage. Staff are also working to improve and expand direct communication with customers. We currently only have emails and cell phones for about 14% of our customers. Okay. And we are encouraging all customers to send us an email at pio@rmcsd.com with their account number and their email and cell phone so that we can interact more directly with them. We are also adding a line on the back of the portion of the statement, which is remitted with checks, on which customers can update their contact info. We would also like to propose a drawing for the first 500 emails, the next 500 emails, et cetera, with a cash prize or gift certificate to a local establishment to encourage participation in sending us that kind of information. The new statement format was applied to the October 25th billing cycle, and and it eliminates the confusing dual column format that was implemented in April. We returned to the look and feel of the old statements, which more clearly laid out the statement date and other information, and we look forward to feedback regarding the new format. And as I just indicated, Mark Matulich joined the staff on Monday, October 30th, and has been working diligently to get up to speed regarding the audit, the financial system, and various other administrative issues. Staff fully reconciled all sick leave credit balances earlier this month, and the accrual rate was established incorrectly in paychecks. There was just a transposition of numbers that was resulting in errors, and then the staff had made adjusting entries in 21 and 22 to counterbalance the error, adding to the complexity of unwinding the mistake. And our payroll tech and retired annuitant Donna McLeod figured this out for us and has been a great help in general since she began in June. Amelia Wilder, our highly competent board secretary, continues to make much appreciated recommendations for either cost saving or general operational improvements. And Chris Funakashi, our resourceful and dedicated accountant, has been a key part of the team that is trying to resolve the remaining audit issues assessing and utilizing Great Plains, the financial accounting system, and improving our billing format. The district is very fortunate to have these capable people helping with the rebuilding of the administrative unit. And along the same lines of the administrative unit, we have a little financial update here, and then Mark will go into a little greater detail. But we have, separate from just the response that we'll have to write once the audit is released, we have the we have just one outstanding item remaining on the 2021 CSD audit, and that is the unwinding of these audit adjustment accounts that now are down to about $123K. If you've been following along on this, we were at $3.8 million, then down to $800K, down to $300K, and so we're slowly, you know, getting it all figured out and getting those funds assigned to the correct revenue or expense account. So we're hoping that we get this done, and then we're through the gates on 2021's audit. And included in this packet is a high-level budget actual report for the first 4 months of the current fiscal year, and it shows spending on track and roughly $1.2 million lower than budgeted for the entire year. And staff provided a template to the Finance Committee members and is expecting feedback soon by the 17th to produce future budget to actual reports that show individual fund budgets and corresponding expenses to facilitate budget management. Staff is hoping to produce the fund-based budget to actuals for the December board meeting, and we are also evaluating an alternative payroll payment company that has better customer support, fewer system glitches, and lower fees. And then additionally, by correcting coding errors in the payroll system, either the existing or the proposed new system, we are exploring a process for posting labor costs to the general ledger, and those will allow it to be more streamlined. And staff are also evaluating a more technologically advanced method for scanning paper checks. The district receives, let's see, how many paper checks do we get a year? It's like thousands, like 20,000 a year. It's a huge number. And so we're working to get a multi-document scanner in place and hope to, and one that also gives us the data in Excel without manual entry, by manual key entry. And then we hope to have that new approach resolved by the end of the year. And we're also transitioning to a new credit card provider to benefit from better rebates. We don't have any exam passed information. And then just a couple of other highlights here. Under operations, do you have a question?
Yeah.
Okay. I this may be premature, but if we have money left over, how do we decide where we're going to put it? Or do we just keep the surplus?
Well, yeah, we have a shortfall in our reserve, so we're just going to be, anytime we have a tightening of the belt that results in, in residual monies, we'll be putting it back into the future expenses.
Okay.
Yeah, as part of the reserves, just to build up that kitty that the grand jury referenced. Mm-hmm. So that's the plan. Any other questions?
No, go ahead.
All right. So on November 2nd, Director Stephen Booth facilitated the town hall for the IWMP, which was organized by the operations unit. The event included a recap of the supply research and an overview of the demand research. These two phases are the precursor to the third phase, the options. A healthy Q&A session followed the formal presentation. Staff gathered and published questions from the March town hall and questions received prior to the November event, and will respond to all questions posed at or after the November meeting. More financial issues will be addressed by Mark Matalich, and Michael will talk about development, and Kelly will talk about security. And then just a last couple of notes on a couple of other items. Outreach and regional communication. I spoke to the Kiwanis on November 2nd, and I'm looking forward to more interactions with other community groups in the future. And we're still working on that proposal from the camera subcontractor, OHO Technologies, trying to figure out a viable location for the receiver. We entered into some difficulty with the ideal location for the receiver, which has to be in like a line of sight to the cameras. And we'll bring the board back, we'll bring the proposal back to the board for consideration and approval when that issue is resolved. And then finally, the Communications Committee met on October 10th and discussed the importance of accessible, transparent, and clear communication. And I'm sorry, we met last week mm-hmm. in November. And we talked about traditional methods of communication like the pipeline and the website being maintained, and also have the message from the GM and the pipeline, and as previously mentioned, are working to gather emails and cell phones in order to establish a direct means of communicating with residents. And as I just said, we were publishing questions from the prior town call, and we'll share all those Q&A from the November meeting so that all residents can see the conversations and read the district's responses. And our priority is to make it as easy as possible for residents to access information regarding the district's activities. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
I like the report. I like the report. It was full of details.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay.
I'll open it up to other board members. Any questions of the GM? Okay, thank you. Moving on to the finance, Mark. Okay.
Great, thank you very much.
And in here we have the status of the audits. Nobody was going to tell me that you couldn't see my screen.
Well, we can see your screen. We just don't know what you're supposed to put on there.
I've been diligently scrolling through, keeping up. So there is the status of the audit.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
Mark.
Thank you so much. As General Manager Morris mentioned, we've been working with the external auditors to complete that fiscal year 2021 financial statement audit. And as Amelia had up there on the screen a minute ago, you can see there were initially 79 audit tasks for us to complete. And out of that, there's really just one left, and that's to unwind $123,000 unresolved audit adjustment balance. And then once we're done with that, all the punch list items will be finished, and then we'll just write up the management discussion and analysis for the financial statements. So that covers the two items that were up at the top there. Under financial reports, we discussed the year-to-date results, fiscal year 23-24 already. It looks like taking the first 4 months of the year, it looks like we're coming in a little bit under budget, and if we were to go ahead and project that out for the year, we're projecting about a $1.2 million surplus for 23-24. And then for 22-23, the staff, we're working on making sure that all transactions are posted for that fiscal year. That's one of the issues that we've been having with the financial accounting system, is that all the subsidiary ledgers don't necessarily interface directly with the main accounting system. So we've been working on making sure that we get all the entries posted in there for fiscal 22-23, and we're making progress on that. And as soon as we have all of those entries in and we conduct a review, we'll have a report out for that fiscal year. And then same with capital improvement projects. Staff are reviewing all the capital improvement projects and amounts spent on each project, and once spending on each active project has been reviewed and all transactions are properly recorded, we'll put out a budget to actual report depicting project on each project. Under financial management policies and objectives, staff are conducting a comprehensive review of the district's financial accounts to ensure that these accounts are structured to maximize investment earnings and streamline our internal processes. The financial accounting system analysis. Staff conducted a review of Great Plains accounting system, and that included a four-hour meeting with the district's Great Plains account representative. And it was a really informative session, and the consensus among the staff is that Great Plains appears to be a viable general ledger accounting package, and it should meet our needs. And the primary issue, as I mentioned a moment ago, appears to be that just many of the subsidiary ledgers are not set up to interface with Great Plains, and so there have been a lot of transactions that just have not been posted on a timely basis. Okay, so we're out and evaluating each peripheral system for compatibility with Great Plains. We're looking at how much they cost and efficiency and effectiveness in producing timely and accurate financial results.
Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I had a chance to meet with you, and this was one of the questions we talked about. And from the past, we had so many issues around being able to interface. I really want to make sure that if we go with Great Plains, that they can do this for us and that we can have a smooth situation where the interfacing actually works and we know what we're doing from month to month and year to year.
Agreed. Yes, and we will be able to identify peripheral systems that interface effectively. If they don't, then we'll go with something that does.
Okay.
And the good news with Great Plains is it's a lot more cost effective than some of the alternative packages that are out there. So it's a good use of the district's funds.
So we were looking at Tyler, and we're going to keep Tyler for the billing. Is that correct?
That is the plan right now.
Okay.
Is to stick with Tyler for the billing, but stay the course with Great Plains, mm-hmm. and just identify some other periphery systems that interface with that in an effective way. And the Great Plains package for the general ledger, I believe, is much more cost-effective than the Tyler solution.
Any other questions?
No, that's
I'll
it.
Open it up, board. Any questions of Mark?
Nope.
I guess I'll kick it to the two finance committee members. You saw the reports or what he offered, so nothing jumped out at me to say no or not to. So I would say it's back to the committee to confirm it and get that done, because there was a little bit of a timeline. My only other...
I have some questions when you get done.
Okay. My only issue is I'm very cautious on the projection of having additional revenue left over. Chemicals usually get spent second half of our fiscal year. You know, it's just some of those types of things. And then the only thing I would ask is between yourself, Mark, and Mimi, we land on a date before the next board meeting on when we can get a mid-year projection. And some of that will be as we get the reports built, right? Mm-hmm. But I'd really like to have, even if it just goes to finance and comes back to us, just to get the best snapshot for a mid-year budget, and then that'll prep us. You've got in here March 24, you know, our fiscal cycle, but we got to get that done, in my humble opinion. So if you can just kind of land on a date that's practical for you folks.
So if I may, Tim, at the last finance committee meeting, Mark and Mimi shared with us a tool that we had seen before for year-to-date reporting,
mm-hmm.
and I think the plan is to have something to us.
Perfect.
In December.
Excellent.
Which will give us year-to-date through November. Martin and I both looked at the format, I think, and we're comfortable with it. It's one that we've seen before. So
excellent.
I was really pleased that we're on track, because I've been asking for that ever since I sat in this chair for the first time.
Okay, very good. And then go ahead.
Yeah, I maybe I should have raised this during the bills paid on the consent, but finance report, I do have some questions about some of the checks.
Okay.
Let me bring it up.
I do too.
And we can write checks because we have a lot of checks. Orders, like just boxes of checks.
That's good.
Yeah.
So there are two checks written to Ferguson Enterprises, check 11530 and 11550. One says Ferguson Enterprises, one says Ferguson Waterworks, but I'm assuming it's the same company. What are those checks for?
I could probably take that.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Ferguson is a supplier of pipe parts, and so I imagine that the Ferguson Waters is the water subsidiary of Ferguson. So we typically, as our guys do replacements out in the field, we need more stock, more parts, right. And so that's probably what those are.
Yeah, and it's just under $8,000 or something total. There's a check 11537 in the amount of $33,000 and change to the Poon Group. What is the Poon Group still doing for us that we're paying for?
That is a check that an invoice that I held for quite a long time before paying, because I was asking for detail from them to confirm that the hours that we were paying the Poon Group for were different from the hours for Vanessa Burke that were included on another invoice from Russ Branson. And very annoyingly to them, took like 3 or 4 months of kicking the tires and requesting more information before I would pay it. So it's very delayed. It was actually from May or June, but it was highly summarized, and I said I need to see more detail.
All right. Well, that maybe also answers my question about check 11543 to Russ Branson for $17,000 and change. There are 3 payments made to Univar USA.
Chemicals
for the water in the sewer plant.
Okay. And then the two other questions. One is Thatcher Company, just shy of $7,000.
That's our chlorine supplier.
And then what about Velocio LLC? Check number 11574.
Velocio LLC is our maintenance contract for Great Plains. So that's our only cost for Great Plains annually.
Greg Coet. I know the name. I'm wondering what we're paying $900. It's check number 11585 in the amount of $908.65.
I kind of think that was a rebate. I think he's a resident. Can't remember offhand what that is, but I think he's a resident. I can look it up.
He is a resident.
I think that's either a rebate or a bill correction, one of the two. I remember seeing a couple of those.
All right, so you could just follow up with me then individually on that. Absolutely. One. I'd appreciate it. And the last one I have is check 11594, TNT Industrial Consultants, just shy of $130,000.
That was the contractor for Lift Station 3B. That was a single progress payment, entire payment.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I had just one question. Loomis that we're using for rape. Correct me. For the
CIP?
The rape study.
The rape study, right. I knew we were doing it. I just really wasn't aware of the fact that we had started. And so I was just curious about when we anticipate being finished with that.
If I'm not mistaken, we owe them some information on the reserve and CIP stuff.
There's two pieces to the contract. The first piece is they're providing us with the CIP program, so that's the infrastructure side of it. So we're working on that currently. We have a meeting, a data gap meeting, to find out what else they need. And then once we have the infrastructure, and once we have any CIP infrastructure that comes out of the Integrated Water Master Plan, and then when we have the audit, then we'll be in a good position to complete the cost of service analysis, which is the second part of that.
That's right. Because I remember it was kind of on us, and just timing of stuff falling into place. Okay, thank you. Anything else?
No, that was it.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Do you have a speaker?
Yes.
If you're done with the board member questions.
I, a couple,
So we have a new...
It's fine. We'll explain to her afterwards. Go ahead.
We're going to tell you afterwards.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And the procedure since you came.
Oh, I apologize. I've been gone so that you all can do what you do.
I create new procedures.
Couple questions. One, when is the board's newest projection as to when the 2021 audit will be complete? Second one is communications department. Mimi mentioned that they're working toward transparency. It's been 14 months since my last PRA request, and I still don't have fulfilled PRA requests and no communication as to when it'll be completed, so it would be helpful to know that. And then with respect to the surplus, security was cut, and how much of the surplus is our Measure J tax dollars not being used to provide security services? And given the projected surplus, does the board intend to restore patrol services?
Thank you.
Thank you. Going on to item 7.
I'm sorry, before you move on, the public records request is an issue that I have previously expressed concern about. Mimi, I think it predates you being here. I was led to believe that all of the PRA requests that were pending last spring had been resolved. Can you please provide to me, not tonight obviously, but provide to me a list of those PRA requests that are still pending response? I understand we, you know, initially responded within the 10 statutory days, we're working on it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about actually providing the records that were requested or indicating that those records were not available. And if I could have that report before the next board meeting, I'd sure appreciate it.
And just very briefly, the PRA request that Crystal is referencing, she asked for a lot of emails. And so we don't have the staff to go through our IT department, grab the emails out of wherever email land, I don't know. And I had to send them over to an attorney's office, and they are still redacting them. The last I heard, because I'm and I email them weekly and say, when are these going to be taken care of? She's got the very last set. She said there was a lot of redactions and a lot of things that had to be looked at.
Yeah, and thank you for that clarification, Amelia. My understanding was that was completed a few months ago, and if it's not been, then again, that's my request. What's outstanding, as I've mentioned before, that's a pet peeve of mine, having had to jump through hoops, work overtime, work weekends to respond timely to PRA in previous positions. The fact that some of these now are a year and a half old troubles me greatly. If that's the original group, as some of those are still outstanding. So we really need to get that wrapped up.
And I think I will add the PRA request report to my general manager's report every month, just so you can see it. I reported on it either last month or the month before, I can't remember, but I'll add it so we just have it top of mind.
All right. I don't recall seeing that, but that'll be great. And not to respond directly to Ms. Matter, but when we have our year-to-date financial report at the next board meeting, that will show our revenues from Measure J and our expenditures for the security department, correct?
Yep, it will.
We can make sure that the revenues are stratified to show the origins, including Measure J, so that you'll be able to see that.
And my understanding from the budget that we approved and the skeleton crew that we're requiring Chief Benitez to operate with, there's not any surplus there, but we can verify that when we have that report next month.
Yeah, certainly. And just I would only say that what the budget included for 23-24 for security was all the Measure J monies plus $250,000 from the general funds, and that was a reduction of $250,000 from the prior year as part of our ramping down to have security live within the means of the Measure J resources. So that was the plan.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mamie?
Yeah.
I do have another person who would like to speak in public, have a public comment about 7B? Yes.
Yes, please.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gears.
I'd just like to take note of the fact that CSD is apparently going back to its old methods of ignoring people's comments. I mean, she asked a few pertinent comments I think you ought to address, and Tim's response was, well, next item on the agenda. I think you ought to listen to people and answer their questions. Blank look. Thank you, Tim.
All right. Any other folks to speak?
Not now. I have one when Michael's done with his report.
Perfect.
Thank you.
The only comment on the PRA is Mr. Ramos has been, I'll just say, intimately involved in the process.
Pull your mic down, Tim.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Mr. Ramos has been intimately involved in the process, given direction to staff. And then ultimately, once, and I forget the attorney firm, looks at the redacted, it goes through Mr. Ramos for one more confirmation. So it is an arduous task nonetheless. I hear and feel everybody's frustrations. One of the items on the PRA is the audit, and until we get the audit done, I can't fulfill that. So I understand that. Moving on to 7C, I believe it's movie time, Kelly?
Not yet. Oh, keep that till the end.
Saving that.
Yes. Okay, moving on. I was sick last month, and I was on vacation, so didn't have a lot of meetings, but we'll start from the beginning in operations. We currently have 8 full-time gate officers and 3 part-time gate officers to keep our 24/7 obligation at the gates. We have 3 patrol officers at this time, and we still have our 3 vacant positions, so we're unable to offer 24-hour patrol coverage. We had 93 patrol shifts in October, and 32 were not covered. Moving on to our vehicles, our fleet is down to is up to 2 vehicles. Our newest Toyota truck is still in the radio shop waiting for parts. I was told this week that the parts are in, and they should have it back to us by the end of this week, and hopefully we'll have that other Toyota Tacoma out on patrol here by the end of the month. We're still waiting for our dash camera for our Toyota truck. The delivery will be sometime in January 2024. We are prepared to mirror what the RMA has in their vehicles, so we'll all be on one system, and that system downloads to the cloud, and that way we'll have all of our traffic violations, accidents, if you will, captured with video in the vehicle, so that should make things a lot better for us. Going to our camera system update, I have good news with that. We now have a brand new state-of-the-art camera in the wash adjacent to the north gate. I talk about it later on. We had some fresh graffiti in the wash. It was red, and at the village there was some graffiti as well. And hopefully with this new camera in place, I can see it from my computer. Mimi can see it from her computer, and we can see it from the gates as well. And that went in last Friday, and hopefully that will stop the vandalism in our washes.
Thank you.
So it is up and running. And it cost about, the original estimate was like $5,000, and I think we got it for like $3,900. So that was the final cost from Moloch. Southgate repairs, that was done last month, and it was about $11,000 for repair. But I'm sorry.
What happened? It says Halloween.
I haven't got there yet.
I'm sorry.
It's coming. So Southgate repair. It was about $11,000, but fortunately, to recap for the board, this was an RV that went through the lane, and it took off part of the roof up top, and we were able to use their insurance and pay for the repair. So it was minimum delay at the gates when they did the repair. It only took about a day, so that was good.
South.
This is Southgate's repair. And I put this because Southgate got a lot of calls the month of October, especially in Halloween with the backup traffic that was happened in and on Halloween. This caught us off guard because the prior 2 Halloweens, we didn't see that. I don't know what it was differently this time around, but there was a lot of trick-or-treaters and a lot of requests to get into the South specifically.
Mostly on the South, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was the Halloween house that they had going on, but it was something out of the usual. We didn't see it, so next year we'll have double staff for that night. But yeah, it was something unexpected. We didn't see it, but we didn't hear about it.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Kelly, regarding patrol shifts, when I read in the River Valley Times that we've run additional patrols. What does that mean?
It means we'll do extra patrol. For example, we had a shooting I'll talk about a little later at the Equestrian Center. So after that, we'll do extra patrol in that area. We'll highlight that so they can see that we gave extra patrol. Vacation requests, we'll do extra patrol for that. If there's a problem area, we'll highlight it, and they'll put in the extra patrol.
So what does that mean when you're reporting 93 patrol shifts, 32 aren't covered?
That means we didn't have a... Out of the three shifts, there was a shift not covered completely.
Right. So what is an extra patrol then?
Extra patrol is something you do within your eight-hour shift. We talked about all those sites that you have to visit and log in.
Just an extra time past
extra time,
that?
Yes.
Okay.
Extra time.
Got it. Thank you.
And I'm sorry.
More
though.
Of a focused extra can insinuate we're putting overtime, right. But he's had direction not to. Go ahead.
Yes, and so the Halloween, so next year we will double our staff. We didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I was in that process, and it's smaller than what has happened Mother's Day, Thanksgiving, and Christmas on the north before we did the extra, where we hired additional. I think, I don't know if it's a one-off, but if it's on the calendar, so be it. I think... Specific to that, we work back through RMA to educate them. If you're going to the Colbert to get the full-size candy bars,
you've heard about us.
put the request in, and we can fast pass and do all those things.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it started at 3 in the afternoon.
And that's the thing.
And that's so different.
Right. I thought maybe it was a new officer, but, you know, Karen's been here 18, 19
Karen
years.
Was just finishing up, and I had a conversation with her that day. And like I said, if it's one-off, so be it. But moving forward, I think then we also tag RMA because the large-size candy bars are bringing in the
from the south.
Bringing in the folks. Thank you. Continue on, Kelly.
Oh, very good. And I continued. I met with the RMA several times during the month, and attended the compliance meeting. Met with Troy, who they were our friends at RMA. They gave us the power system in a timely manner so we can finish and get that camera. They saw it as a priority, and I even think they went down there and removed the graffiti and paint for us. So I wanted to thank them for that. The other issue that we had is because we don't have patrol 24/7 anymore, you're starting to the community is starting to feel a little bit of pain, especially with things like restrooms not being open on the weekend. I understand they have a compliance officer that works, but they don't have the keys to open up the restroom. So that's one of those issues. If we open them, if we don't close them, it's fine for the community to use. However, then vandalism goes up significantly.
Right.
So it's that balance that we work out. So we were.
So I think, and you've seen correspondence from Director Booth to the GM. At the end of the day, the last time this happened was January 1st, 2023. So we've gone since January 1st, 2023 until the other weekend.
Right.
So to me, just playing the odds, it's more than acceptable. I think some of the thought processes of additional keys, redundancy in the process, my humble, and I'll open it up to the board, it is more critical that we close some of these infrastructures to stop any enticement that there is. We just have to do our due diligence when we have something like this again. There's redundancy, and we have it in the community. We just have to implement something.
And some of the things we can do, we thought also we could take a set of our keys and put them at the south gate.
Correct.
And if someone were to come, board member would come by and say, hey, I need the keys,
we'll have identified key leaders in the community that will do that. All right, thank you. Mm-hmm.
So on that point, historically, have our patrol officers been responsible on a daily basis for locking and unlocking the restrooms in the parks?
Correct. And some of the gates to the parks.
Those are parks that are owned and operated by RMA, is that correct?
Correct, and the village, and we close up their boardroom, and the post office, and we try to do our part in the past. I'm sorry, question?
No, we don't close them up. For some reason, they have their own system.
Okay, if we go to the next slide, we'll see our compliance We wrote some parking citations. We assisted RMA with some stop sign violations. Let me go to the next slide. I think there's about 15,000 entries into our visitor lane.
Oh,
yeah, 15,000 entries into our gates, and I think I had one complaint, which again, I think these guys are doing a fabulous job. Our gate officers. And we go down to the notes. Is there any questions?
Yes, Kelly.
Okay, my part.
Because you were out, you have it here, it's October 5th. Obviously that's turned over, well, a couple things jump out at me. One, I think it was tremendous work.
Oh, I was going to talk about it right now. You want to go into it? Okay. Yes, in the notes is a couple things I'll talk about. On Tuesday, October 5th at approximately 2:20 hours in the morning, CSD security was on routine patrol in the area of the equestrian center and heard several possible gunshots and immediately responded to the equestrian center. Upon arrival, the officer is met by the gate, by equestrian personnel, who advised him there had been two individuals shot and the suspect had fled the area onto Jackson Highway. The security officer immediately requested the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department and Metro Fire respond to the hangar inside the equestrian center where the shooting had occurred. Upon the security officer's arrival, he discovered two shooting victims and several personnel attempting to aid the victims. The Sheriff's Department and Metro Fire arrived and transported the victims to the hospital. The Sheriff's Department conducted a criminal investigation. There, I got a lot of calls, this kind of call. Again, we thank the board for allowing our officer to have vests. It was just a matter of seconds that we missed the suspect and very well he could engage with the suspect. One of the things else we learned from that, we're requesting to have meet with Mimi to have trauma kits in our vehicles because there was a person bleeding and they didn't have the appropriate gear to treat this person. Again, you know, we were right there and we heard it and we immediately responded like the officer did. He did a very good job securing the scene, and even then it took a long time for the sheriffs and Metro Fire to get out there because the scene had to be secured before the fire department goes in, and they won't just necessarily take our word for it. They wait for the sheriffs to clear the scene, to make it safe, then they'll come in. So during that time, we're first responders, having those trauma kits and things like that make it a lot better for us. I did meet with both the detectives came and met with us. They were very grateful. We completed a report for them. We completed, gave them body-worn camera footage of the incident, and they were able to start their investigation from that. Both victims survived. I understand one's paraplegic from the shooting. They're both brothers. Our suspect, we have a picture of him. We put out to our gates. We put out to as many people that we can, that will allow it, or that will can see it and possibly respond to it. But the suspect is still outstanding, last we heard.
The individuals who were shot didn't know who it was or what?
We believe that they knew each other. They were playing soccer, and then a fight in turn, argument over soccer happened, and then the suspect left and came back with a revolver some kind of a handgun, shot him, and then fled the area. And when he fled the area, he was approached by another person who got the picture of him, and then so that's how we have a picture of him, and we turned that over to the Sheriff's Department. And I understand it was during the equestrian show. It was like a show that was going on for a week, and so there was unusual activity and people there 24/7. So, if there's no questions, I'll go to the next one. On Wednesday, October 25th, 2023, there was vandalism reported on the side of the exterior of the village complex. Two lost drawings in red spray paint were approximately 36 inches by 36 inches. There was also similar fresh graffiti in the concrete wash area or by the north gate. And very similar, we suspect it was the same person. The Sheriff's Department was notified, however, there was no video footage available at either location. However, now we have that brand new camera in there that we either prevented it or at least captured that. So hopefully we'll see less graffiti with that. And the last thing I'll talk about is a lot of people were concerned, I don't remember where I exactly heard from this, about why are we writing stop sign citations? Why do we continue to hassle juveniles driving golf carts? without licenses. And rather than to be explained it, I brought a little video here to show what happened last week and how serious this is. This is out of the North Gate. If you watch the stop sign right there, the stop line right there, you'll see a vehicle. The golf cart was turned over and the two minors were inside.
What's this guy?
No license, underage driving, golf cart, made an illegal left-hand turn. Person ran the stop sign. Had he stopped fully, he might have saw him before they came. And that's it. So I bring this up to show this is why we write those stop sign violations and why we're constantly after the kids that are driving without licenses. We see it all the time, people bringing little infants, holding them as they cross the same intersection from Jackson, and this is what we're afraid of. So this is why we do it. I just wanted to bring that. I thought a video would show. That's why we do this.
Okay, I'll open it up to the board. Any questions, Kelly?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
On that point, and this is also an issue that I've raised before, I understand what you just showed us. And your explanation, Kelly, is that's why we do it. My question is, why doesn't RMA do it?
They do it too. I think we're there 24/7. They are not. I think we're in the vehicles more than they are. They have other issues to do. It's kind of I've always thought of it as a partnership, if you will. But we're there more than they are. We're there 24/7. There's no way the entity I think that works at CST or RMA that's 24/7 with us.
Mm-hmm. No.
And that's very unique when you're there all the time. You just naturally go to obligations. Even when here with order, when there's generators that need to be filled with gas in the middle of the night, we're here 24/7. We help out. So it's always been like a teamwork because we're there 24/7. I think it's probably why the history of why they've given us so much things to do.
No, and I understand the spirit of cooperation,
yes,
and community interest, and I actually had a very lengthy discussion with Scott Adams on this point last week. Again, given the dire circumstances relative to the Measure J funding for security, I am alarmed that we're not actively in the process of discussing whether or not some of these services that are security folks are providing round the clock ought to be compensated for by the RMA to the extent that we are enforcing their traffic rules and regulations. And I just toss that out. I'm not going to belabor the point tonight. I've made it more than once. It'll come up again, I'm sure, during budget deliberations. But I just...
And I agree, and I was hopefully with this ad hoc committee, the new negotiation between CSD and RMA can be fixed financially and with a new understanding, so I absolutely agree with that.
Thank you. Any other? So, Kelly, it's what you're requesting for your staff. I would ask Mimi, it's basically called Stop the Bleed. It goes with AEDs. With all the mass shootings, it's very common. My recommendation would be, because we do have field saves from Michael's folks doing CPR, that, and maybe it's counterintuitive to my peer over here, but we are out there, and we have numerous vehicles out in the community, and if everyone, in my humble opinion, had an AED and stopped the bleed in all district vehicles, we would be a pretty safe community from that standpoint. But we got to take steps, right? And so I would just say it's known as stop the bleed,
okay,
kits, very common, minimal training type of thing. And really where it comes from is our young men and women in United States military, not one soldier, airman, sailor, or Marine goes into combat without a tourniquet.
Sure.
So it's just that type of thing.
I'm sorry, Tim, I have one more thing. I also, people are asking me what happened to the young man that lit that explosive device on July 4th. And I have a little update here. I did meet with the arson investigator just 2 days ago, and he was he's got a full caseload, but he is taking our case seriously. He came out, and we provided him a report. a video of the incident itself and a full confession from the suspect. We gave that all to him. He is turning it over to the district attorney's office, and he will let us know what the outcome, whether it's a DA reject or if they're going to press charges. So we will have a conclusion of it. But he's just turning it over to the district attorney's now, so it might be first part of next year.
Okay. And this was a juvenile?
This was a juvenile, correct.
Just for the sake of discussion, if they do end up charging him or he ends up having to answer to his activities, can we let people in the community know that this is what happens when you...
Well, whatever they tell me, I'll tell the board, and this is public. And I understand RMA, they've also issued their fines to the parents. They've done that as well. But okay. So as soon as they tell us, it's public information once they... But he is a juvenile, so it's less information you get than you do with him.
Right. Yeah. But somehow it seems like if other kids hear about the
correct
activities.
This is what we talked about before. Even this is like we're approaching the next 4th of July already, and the fact that this kid's going to go to court and going through it gets out there, it spreads out there to the community. That's why I keep pressing for the sheriff's department to cite the juveniles for alcohol, because 6 months later they're still going to have to answer. They might think about it next time, but right now there's no hard enforcement with that, and that's been one of my pet peeves or issues I've been trying to work on, because we're limited in what we can do other than cite the parent.
Especially the 13-year-olds.
Right.
And, Mr. Maybe, I do have a comment from the public on Kelly's security report, if you're accepting comments.
One second, please. I would ask, and I think it goes back to Mimi, this video, if we could put it on our website and send it over to RMA and ask them if they would put a link to it. And I know, Kelly, we spoke to Gail because she was leaving for the RMA meeting. If you get that directly to, and again, it can go through staff, but if we get that directly to Gail, we had a little bit of conversation. Like I said, she had to leave for the 6 o'clock meeting from that. And then finally, to the security officer on the October 5th, again, this is why the intent of having security, right? And as a district and as a board, we understand and value this. We've taken a few swings and missed on getting funding. Some of what Director Booth's comments are as the RMA is going through their process, but this is a classic answer to the question, why do we pay so much for Measure J and Measure J doesn't cover. Quite honestly, it's the man's lucky that he's a paraplegic and not a deceased individual, right?
Right.
It could have gone a whole lot worse.
And the scary thing is because it's just a few more seconds, because he was already in the air and he heard it. He just happened. I think he delayed a little bit because he didn't know where it was coming from, but he was at the question center just as the person pulled out and made a left.
Right.
There's no question if he's going to attack two unarmed people, armed security, that he might think is the police, there's no question there might have been an exchange of gunfire.
Okay. So. And I'll work back through staff on follow-up with the employee.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Amelia, you had another
speaker,
please.
I do have a public comment. Crystal?
How long do you think it'll take to put that video up on the website?
I can do it first thing in the morning if it's okay with Andrew and Mimi.
No concerns.
Okay. I think it would be. I would be happy to post that. I mean, Director Booth and I live relatively close to each other. People blow through that stop sign, and that could happen near any one of our houses, and it could have turned out a lot worse. I think the idea of the stop the bleed is great, but you need to have patrol in order for that to matter. With the trauma kids. And I think, you know, when you were talking about securing the scene, prior to all these changes to security in 2021, we had former police officers that were our patrol officers, and that fire department, when Pritchard was, and I think he still is the captain, he would actually allow our CSD security to secure the scene before the Sac Sheriff's Department got there, which makes a huge difference. I mean, I think, and I hope to make it to the other meeting, but just to give you guys an idea, yesterday, somebody called Sac Sheriff's Department to respond to Murrieta, and the Sheriff's Department told us an hour and 45 minutes before they could get here. In June,
there was an officer who lives on the north that there was a call of an assault with a deadly weapon. His neighbor was holding a gun at him. It took the sheriff's department 40 minutes to get there. And there are similar instances just like that. And I really think, I get what you're saying, and we can agree to disagree as far as funding. I think you need to figure out the admin allocation and figure out some other things, and you will be able to live within the means, but you have to bring the patrol back because they're not, right now, there are not plans to give us more SAC Sheriff's Department out here. And the fact that we have officers the Sheriff's Department isn't responding or can't respond quick enough for an officer-involved assault with a deadly weapon, if there's any time when they should have somebody in the area, it should be then. But many of us are not law enforcement or first responders, so it's a real issue. We can't afford to have security continuously cut. And I appreciate that you thank them for the vest, because let me tell you, I don't forget how a couple years ago this board was saying that the vests aren't necessary, and I thought they were necessary. So I appreciate that you thank them for it, and I think it's imperative that they be protected. That's my 2 cents.
Thank you. I was admonished that I don't acknowledge comments from the community, so I'll acknowledge some comments from the community. Thank you. I feel the passion. I see it. Everything you said, I don't necessarily agree with. However, whether the scene is safe or not is not an individual call by a company officer. That's set by Sacramento Metropolitan Fire District policy. So decisions can be made to go against policy, and that's totally up to that company officer. He's responsible for his and her crew. So I prefer not to leave it to, if so-and-so's working, then I'll trust them and scene's safe. We need to be consistent, and if we had consistency, there's a million things as a community service district we could be providing. Kelly just rattled off a handful of them. Needless to say, we do not have the staffing. And again, this board took some swings. The majority of the community spoke on Measure R. They don't want to pay for extra. They couldn't understand why we're paying for security to start with. As far as the incident with the officer involved in June, he was an off-duty Sacramento City police officer, so it wasn't an officer involved. They still treated it as a civilian. So again, there shouldn't be a difference between an officer-involved shooting or a gun versus an officer-involved. But I understand how the sheriffs do their priority dispatching, and it is what it is, and hopefully the community, as of 4 minutes ago, we're having that conversation with the sheriff's work, because you're absolutely right. There are no more resources being allocated to our community from the new sheriff. He doesn't have the funding. So with that, we have to work within our means. As far as your comment about Stop the Bleed kit, we have to have patrol. That's counterintuitive if I have them on all my apparatus. Because again, our field save, I go back to Mario, went above and beyond. Because we have a resident that is alive and well. So that's just an example of the available capacity that we can put in our system. But again, at the end of the day, we as a district, we have to be consistent. And right now, we're not consistent with the staffing because we are not. We are consistent with the funding, and it's not ugly. I mean, it is ugly, and it's not promising. So, I'll leave it at that. Any other board members can make comments.
I just have a follow up on the discussion about the July 4th incident. I have confirmed that juvenile court records are not public, except for traffic infractions. And so, unlike with an adult being charged, where you can, all you need is the docket number and you can track the case, it's a matter of public record. With juvenile records, that's not the case. So we may or may not learn very much very, very soon, Director Butler, about what happens with that young person.
Yeah.
Any other questions, Kelly? Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thanks for coming back from Hawaii. I wasn't sure if it was a one-way trip or not. I'll be honest, but I knew you weren't going to leave your Tesla behind.
Sharktober.
Okay. Oh, nice. Michael, please, 7D.
Okay, thank you. First, I'd like to start off my report to announce that our intern, Aurora Rincon, who's been working on GIS for us for over a year, has taken a permanent job with the San Jose Water Company. Aurora served the district well and contributed her talents to make our system an excellent tool for their operations department. And of course, we wish her the best.
She was a sharp young lady. I've had interaction with her, and a good soccer player.
And at this point, we just did not have the full time capabilities to be able to employ her full time.
I understand.
So I'm proud of her actually, and we had a really nice party for
good.
Her leaving.
Thank you.
And
thank
so
you.
Her.
Yeah, she did good for the district.
All right, under the water treatment facility, Plant 1 is in operation and currently producing potable water at a rate of 1.6 million gallons per day. Plant 2 is currently offline for maintenance. As of November 1st, our cumulative potable water production for the current year is 453.6 million gallons, with 51.3 million gallons used in the month of October. Raw water storage and delivery, the total water currently stored between Clementia, Chesbrough, and Calero totaled 2,979 acre-feet as of November 1. The district began pumping from the consumedness on the 6th of November at a rate of 10.7 acre-feet per day. We did have to stop that pump on the 13th because the river flow dipped below the 70 CFS. But it's nice we got a nice early run on pumping due to one very small precipitation event. On to our sewer facility. The tertiary process of our wastewater facility is currently offline. The operators are in the process of testing for pre-chlorination effectiveness to support some of the design information that we will be needing for our district wastewater sodium hypochlorite project. The current average driver of the influent flow into the facility for September was about 0.38 MGD, which is very normal for that time. There's a myriad of items we have under utility crew work. I'll hit the high points. Let's see. We actually had our staff come back from FMLA, and our utility worker that was out for surgery is back and working with the crew. So this is good news for us. Let's see. We received 13 homeowner calls for water-related issues from high water use, water leaks and high water bills, and two of those calls were diagnosed as water leaks in the service line going from the water main to the meter, and CSD is responsible to fix. Several people with high water bills were diagnosed with excessive irrigation usage. For the Murrieta Plaza, we are in the process of working with the Murrieta Plaza to get their fire service backflow updated to the newer regulations. We're working on getting a letter out to them and getting I'm getting a line on what those new regulations are so we can work.
Do you know if it was identified just through normal inspections or
Our inspections.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we actually get an automated backflow prevention notice from the county and
okay.
the state.
Yeah. I was wondering how it was identified. Thank you.
And so we get the notices even when it's not our backflow, because it's our system.
Right.
We responded to 4 water leaks in the month of October. One leak was repaired. We replaced 2 service lines and had 1 14-inch water main service saddle fail due to corrosion that had to be replaced, and that was on South Murrieta Parkway, or South Murrieta Drive in the south. The CCC has completed all drainage weed abatement in the Rancho Murrieta North drainage system. Utilities crew have gone out to clean up the Chesbrough protection ditch on the 1st of October, and staff was recently back today due to some additional weeds that have grown since that one time and some debris that was placed in the ditch.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ask this now. Mimi and I and Travis were out there at that ditch, and it's a pathetic example of a ditch. And one of the things that...
Whereabouts?
On Chesbrough, on the side that
It runs adjacent to the pathway between the residential properties and the pathway. It's really a gutter.
Yeah. And it's very close to that's the edge of where Chesboro is. Mm-hmm. And what happens, I guess, from my understanding, is that there's a lot of, the guys who come and cut and blow or whatever they...
Landscapers.
And they blow all the stuff into the ditch. And the ditch is not even a sizable ditch. It's this little, whatever you call it. So I think that's one of the things that, if we ever have any money soon, that we need to do something about that. That ditch needs to be deeper. It needs to be cement. It needs to be protected from all that blowing.
A majority of it is cemented, right?
Yeah. It's.
But it's not deep enough.
I will say that it's, from an engineering standpoint or just a normal everyday standpoint, it's kind of poorly designed and constructed. Its intent is to protect Chesboro Reservoir from any residential runoff, and in a sense it does accomplish that. However, maintenance intensive. I walked the ditch out with our, I invited our district engineer to come out. We walked the ditch together. We brainstormed some potential solutions. One of the solutions would be to pipe the ditch and put like 3 or 4 inch rock on top. That would be, fairly expensive, and when you analyze the cost, back of the napkin cost, we're talking probably about $500,000 to get that in. And when you take a look at just cleaning the ditch more frequently, it kind of makes sense just to increase the maintenance. There was also an idea to potentially get with the Department of Drinking Water and see if there are any overland flow solutions, situations where we could allow some of the stormwater to just enter Chesboro under certain very strict conditions that would be acceptable to the state. And so that would be the low cost solution to get water out of that ditch, because part of the problem is that water just stays in the ditch and gets stagnant.
So, no. my question or my point is that that ditch does not go all the way around Chesboro. It goes around one side of it when it's closest to the reservoir. So when you're thinking about what kind of solutions we have, I think that's one of the things you have to think about. It's not going to be a all-around Chesboro kind of thing.
Correct. Yeah, the reason that it's on the reason it's on the west end of Chesboro is that's the demarcation between residential and not residential. On the other side, there's really nothing draining into it. So that's the reason for the protection ditch. Now, in the past, they have done some overland flow treatment that's been very acceptable to the state and proved to be very effective, and it could be the lower cost solution. But that's kind of what we're looking at. So. We're going to take a look, just a brief look at that solution, but I think we're probably going to be more going towards just increasing the maintenance, because that's going to be your lower cost over the life cycle of any of those projects.
Staying with that for a second, Michael, are we going to contract with CCC for next season?
We're in the process of contacting CCC. We're in the process of contacting the goat herders and any of the other weed abatement professionals to see if we can't get them locked into an early April and then locked into towards the end of the year, right prior to when we get the precipitation.
Okay.
The goal has always been, since I've been here, let's get someone that we can depend on that's going to come back year after year so we can get ahead of the seeding of the weeds and also prepare us for winter.
Okay. Thank you.
Michael, RMA does the maintenance around that portion of the lake as far as getting rid of weeds. They go in there and whack the weeds down. Where is the point? Do we know who built that ditch, and are we completely sure that it's our responsibility to maintain it?
Well, that leads to a really large question. You know, it's probably our responsibility because we have the reservoir. But having said that, I've never seen any document saying that this is transferred to the district like many of the storm drains that we currently maintain. I've yet to see any transfer documents. Doesn't mean that it's not ours, but I have yet to see those. So typically, you know, in a municipal situation, when you inherit infrastructure from EID or RMA or a developer, there's some type of transfer agreement and some kind of a value so we can place that on our books and depreciate it over time. So yeah, that's a question that I can't answer this evening.
Okay. I just if they're out there, and I see their crews out there when the weeds get tall, knocking the weeds down around the ditch, and maybe they're creating some of the problems that are stopping the flow. Maybe it's up to them to clean out what.
Oh, good luck.
What they.
Yeah,
I
see where you're going with that.
Yeah, it's not for tonight, but I will certainly bring it up to RMA Maintenance Committee to discuss.
And I'm not necessarily sure, as far as the Chesbro ditch is concerned, if it is RMA or not. I think it might be more private landscapers. Point-to-point private landscapers might, oh, look, there's a place to put the leaves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably more what's going on, or at least I'm not aware of any RMA dumping anything in the Chesbro ditch.
No, it's the mow and blow people.
Well, the other is you'll have some that'll just keep the oak leaves and everything off the pathway, and it blows one way or the other.
Sure, sure.
They just go down the middle. But I think that is something to kind of follow up on, Randy, on your end with your through the maintenance committee you're on with RMA, because yeah, we should be able to do a joint venture, and I'm sure everyone remembers when we were going through our Prop 218, the photo ops of people cleaning the ditch, saying that CSD isn't doing their job, and they want a pay raise, and they want to raise our rates, and you know, and right. And again, the article stated that they were having to do it, and it appears they only did it the one time for the photo op. So, ironically, we're talking about it now. So,
you know, and I think one of the potential solutions moving forward, at least with the ditches and with the weeds, because those two issues are synonymous. Sometimes people call us, hey, the weeds are high. It's like, you know, I hate to say, hey, we're just responsible for this part. But if we had this a cohesive right. You know, cooperation with the RMA to share costs, you know, why do two contracts and we can just do one? So I think that's probably going to be the holy grail okay. If we can accomplish that at some point.
Okay. One second. Go ahead.
By any chance, have you looked at the storm drainage and flood control master plan to see if that particular facility is addressed at all?
I have not seen that in that, and I have not looked at that recently.
It's in there.
Oh, okay.
1988 drainage
plan. Yeah, June 1988.
And it's probably
on the
website.
That plan was approved.
It's on your website, yes.
Thank you for that.
It deals specifically with the responsibility too for that, not that specific ditch, but ditches as described, and also for ditches, also for all those bridges that go across during
their storm. That's good to know. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mike. Continue, please.
All right, moving forward. Let's see. We're work plan for November. Our crew has been pretty busy with leaks and everything else, but we're making Basin 5 a priority. We're going to get those trenches dug for the electrical work so we can get that complete, and we'll see the fruits from that come spring.
Michael?
Yes?
as far as Lost Lake is concerned, beyond the trenches and the electrical work, the electrical work will provide more consistent bubblers and the fountain?
Yes, and it'll also improve it was temporarily installed, and there were some safety issues associated with that, so it's also a safety project.
Okay.
Yeah, and it will provide more consistency.
And then next spring, we're going to see a better-looking Lost Lake, and then I don't remember who's responsible anymore for trimming the weeds and all that stuff that finally got done.
Yeah, that's my hope, is that we see a better-looking Lost Lake. I believe CSD is responsible for the toe of the slope going into and into the lake, because
okay.
That lake's a very important
drainage
sediment trap prior to going up to the Kasumnas. It's tied to our main lift south, a pump station that goes under the levee and into the Kasumnas.
And just to add on that, that's one of those jointly AMR.
400 different people are involved.
Yeah, and so once this portion gets done, a reassessment of what does the fencing look like,
right.
Some of those types of things. So,
okay.
So it'll be probably another, could be 6-8 months before we get what we think is done is done. So, all right, go ahead, Michael, please.
We're also going to get the, we've been having a tough time getting the programmer to come out and program the meter that we installed for the airport, but we are working on that, hope to get that done in November. There's a sewer lateral line that we need to replace that's crossing a ditch behind 6884 Torino Park 11. This sewer line, it actually goes into the middle of the ditch, and it's just the way it was lined. And so what we're having to do is extend and harden the sewer line, at least the part that goes through the ditch, the exposed portion. And that's something we're just going to have to keep an eye on, because there is, unfortunately, the way that the sewer was laid and the ditch was laid, you can't really make the ditch deeper, and you can't really make the sewer line deeper. And if we're able to successfully do that project, this is the first kind of like, we're going to try it try to save cost and harden the sewer line going through, or replace it with a ductile iron. And then if that doesn't work, then I think the next step is we're going to have to work with the resident and potentially do a pressurized sewer pump that serves that resident so we can go underneath the ditch.
Okay.
So this is an interesting discovery.
So then my question, Lahitz, because this is Rancho Marietta, how many of these do you think we have?
This is the only one I know of, and I'm assuming... You know, I don't know. I could guess.
Nope. Okay.
I'm not going to.
Nope. Well, and so then my point is, as we work this through, it's Marietta. We've got to have more of these. We just aren't aware of, right?
Not yet.
So if we can get the fix,
right.
We understand it, then we're off and running. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
And then we actually just got done with item D. We dug up the 15-inch Cantova storm drain dead end that didn't have a cap on the pipe. And so we were able to pour a concrete plug at the end, and I had them put lifting hooks in.
Right.
So if we ever extend that storm drain line, we'll be able to, in theory, lift the concrete out.
Perfect.
See.
Okay.
And then, let's see, we also want to complete repairs on the raw water valve upstream, the CIDH, that's leaking a little tiny bit. Moving on to capital projects, we were contacted by Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo to potentially utilize the district water treatment facility for an undergrad student culminating design project. As the client, the district will present students with an RFP for facility planning and 30% design services for the following services. Solidify existing water production capacity at the treatment facility, including addressing manganese. Determine the best way forward to increase capacity for a plant upgrade and reconfiguring for manganese removal. Process reconfiguration suggestions for increased efficiencies, including to support full 4-log removal capacity. This is, I think, an excellent opportunity for both the district and the students. The district gets a lot of free research and engineering, and this could form the basis for that project that I would like to approach the board with to take a look at what is the future of our water treatment plant look like, and how can we, A, attain the capacity that we think we have, and increase the capacity if needed in a way that will work out well for the district for years to come, and also make it a more efficient plant. So they're not going to charge anything except for some of our time to provide them with information. There'll be a we'll be sitting in as the client doing interviews to the various student groups. They're going to be working as a team, and then so we'll be providing them with a problem statement, and then when the culminating design is complete towards the end of their semester, we'll be accepting that completed project. So Travis and I may go down to San Luis Obispo on our own dime, and because it's something that we care about.
Sure.
Michael, how many students, and are they working separately or together?
They're going to be working in separate groups. I don't know how many students.
Separate groups?
Yeah, separate. There'll probably be some students that will be working on the manganese problem. There might be some that are going to be working on the piping issue. And what do we do with our drying beds? And
do we know how many altogether?
I don't off the top of my head. I can find that out for you if you'd like.
Just sounds like a big input of,
I'm excited, you know, at being an engineering student at one point myself, this feels like a nice way to give back, and I think the district will benefit from it, for sure.
Any questions, board members?
Okay. I do have a question from the public, Mr. Merchant.
Got my form, huh? I just had a couple of questions. Number one, on the Cranley safety project. I know we have the Ken Cooley grant money that we've used for the design phases of that. Is there any projected plan to move forward with that, or is there anything budgeted for that in the coming year?
There is. I believe I don't have the budget in front of me, but I did budget to start construction this year we were able to get to construction. Currently, we're at the 90% level, and there are a few designs that I have asked for us to do a better job looking at, and that would be the two intake gates in front of the forebay.
Right.
I want those protected.
Right. Yeah, I got your memo just today
from
you and Mimi. I'm I signed that. Part of it's in an NDA, but I signed that 2006 agreement. I went through the initial temporary fixes that we did with Ed, and I just wanted to relay my recollections of that to you, because I'm really concerned that going forward, based on the inaction that we've had all the way back to when we had the incident, that we would be open in a second case like this to really, really significant liability. I mean, I went through the first liability, and that's as far as I can go with that. But if it were to happen today with how we've reacted since 2006, I think we would be in serious trouble. So I think it's something we should really find some money for.
And John, I don't know if I think I sent out an email today.
You did, yeah.
We would like to meet with you.
And
if there's
like
anything
said,
you could disclose,
it
would be good information for us.
Yeah. The second email I got, and I appreciate it, was on, when I did the research, as it correlates to the numbers you put in the packet with storage versus actual production, which is essentially, I don't know much about engineering, and I don't know much about accounting, but I once did a thesis on supply and demand. So, there's a significant discrepancy in the acre feet that's involved in what we store and what we produce. And matter of fact, it's half of Lake Calero, and something there is either misreported,
or it is seepage and evaporation or any combination of things. But if that is in fact what it really is, I wanted to make sure that was on the table before we got to the Integrated Water Master Plan when we start talking about evaporation. If we really have 600 or 700 acre feet of water that is not making it from storage through the production plant, then I think it's a number we have to reckon with, especially going forward. Those were the two things I had there. If
I can address that.
This is a technical question I have for the secretary. Could you add a question for me on my form for the $200,000 membrane? It's coming up on a couple of items. I just have one specific question.
And John, if you'd like, I can address that second question. Now, did you get my email this evening?
I got it so late that I
probably
didn't,
hadn't had a
I didn't even
to look
get
at.
I saw some of the things you were suggesting might be an issue there, and you could well be right. But I just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you bringing that to my attention because, I've noticed since I've been here that it appears that there may be some, there's seepage in every reservoir, and it's somewhat substantial seepage. And this kind of going through the exercise, I took the months that you gave me, and I just went June 1st to November 1st,
right?
And I ran my own, and our numbers were pretty close.
We're fine, thank you.
You're off by a couple of days, and so
yeah, right. I know. I had 4 days in November in weren't in the production schedule.
I ran the numbers, and I utilized the water plant influent because things happen with water in the plant, so that's. So I used the water plant. It didn't make much of a difference. So to that point, our numbers are pretty close. So when I ran the Folsom pan evaporation rate along with the, I want to call it a mean surface area, because we start full and then we get smaller.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually run the surface area to depth curve. I don't have that yet, but I am getting that. But so I took kind of the mean surface area just to give us an order of magnitude, like, A, does this make sense? Kind of a first cut. And using that, we lose about 407 acre feet in that 5 month period. So there's still, according to my calculations, another 150 acre feet not accounted for, and that's most likely seepage in there. And I will say that there are some inaccuracies in every single flow meter. I don't care how well it's calibrated. There's always a little bit. That doesn't account for a whole lot. So I think what we're probably looking at is the same seepage numbers that I, noticed a year and a half ago when I was kind of looking at some of the calcs. And when you take the seepage number and divide it by the acre feet, you get an inches per day seepage number. And when I ran the calculations, you're getting about a 0.1 inches per day seepage number, which is, I'm more familiar with Oregon standards. I'm getting up to speed on California standards, but that's well within Oregon standards for seepage.
Well, here's my main point, though.
Hold on a second. You two are addressing this offline, right?
Yeah, I sent it.
Yeah, I just gave. Okay. I just finished this a couple of days ago.
Just real quickly. I don't want to get admonished for giving somebody too much time. So if you've got something else real quick, otherwise, this conversation needs to continue.
Sure.
I have the correspondence, but go ahead, John.
Yeah, and that was just the main point, that if, in fact, that is a valid number, okay, no matter how it disappears, and I did it specifically outside of the diversion season, so there was no question. It was water in the reservoir after we stopped pumping and water that goes through the water plant. And there was 670 acre feet of water that's not accounted for. In the business I come from, that was just stolen. But in this
that's
case...
That's 10 months worth of water supply.
Huh?
That's 10 months worth of water supply.
It's half a Lake Calero, pretty much, give or take.
Yep.
Couple of gallons.
Wow.
I calculated 560, but it's...
But
you're in the ballpark.
Yeah. Okay. I'm happy to go through what I know about the Granley stuff with you, and maybe in the same breath we can take a look at this and
that
see
sounds
if we
like
come
a great
to
plan.
Some understanding.
Excellent.
Thank you, sir.
Can we have a report back to the board on both those issues, please?
Sure.
You'll have to do it. I can't do that in 3 minutes.
I'm making that request of our general manager and our director of operations.
And the other is, we know you can't, John, in 3 minutes, just for the record.
No, nor in 10, apparently, John.
Continue on, Michael.
Okay, yeah, and just one aside, you know, typically the best reservoir you could have is small surface area and very deep. So we have reservoirs that are very wide and somewhat shallow, so that does open us up to evaporation.
Yep.
Okay, moving forward, we were integrated water master plan. I think Mimi touched on that. Thanks, Mr. Booth, for providing moderation services.
Hold on one second. Yes,
I just have a question about that. The next go around is going to be with options or what's the A word? I can't remember. I was kind of curious to know if there's any plan to put in with existing development, you know, the 400 houses that aren't done yet but will be, and separate that out from the whole picture where you have this, the additional 697 lots that are mapped, but it's still agricultural zoning. So can you separate that?
I'm not sure what you're getting at. Maybe.
Just curious to know, not beyond curious, but would like to know, if we don't build anything else but just build what we have, build out what we have, where will we stand on the water situation versus if we add another 697 houses? So when they come back to us and talk about options, is that going to be a part of it?
You know, I don't think we're planning on separating that out. That's something that we can talk to the consultants about. That might be a small scope increase. Typically, when you run an integrated water master plan or a master plan like that, you look at the, you know, you look at the stress of the system. You're like, okay, these many homes have this much capacity in the water plant, so you move forward with the projection. But for some reasonable cost, we could probably potentially separate those out if the board wanted to move forward with that option.
I'm beating this drum all year, but I don't understand that. If X is our current utilization, and Y is how much demand will be placed on the system if the currently approved building is completed, and Z is how much demand will be placed if the additional projected build out, X plus Y plus Z is going to equal total potential need. Why is that a challenge? Well, why would that require extra scope?
Well, that's significant model runs. You know, it's not just a simple formula. I mean, it's a whole other model run that'll happen.
So, are they currently only planning to do X plus Y and not include Z?
No.
Well, if Z is what you're referring to is no future development, that's not the plan. Like I said,
well,
I'm sure we.
Linda's identified additional properties that are potentially build out, right? I mean, those are things that haven't been approved yet by the county.
697. Yeah.
Oh, maybe we're talking about the same thing. We're running the model for all known future development within the boundary.
Right.
That's what we're running the model for. That's the stress test.
And we have some that has been approved for final development,
sure,
in theory,
sure,
and some which still has a lot of approvals to gain.
That's correct.
And so what Linda's asking for is, give me the value of each of those, and if you're going to project the totality, it doesn't seem to me that would be a problem. So maybe I misunderstood you.
Yeah, it's possible. I think we're projecting the totality.
But not separate.
But not separately. I mean, it might not be as, I don't want to speak for the consultants, it may not be a lot of additional effort to say what would the outcome, the model, what would the model,
yeah,
the multi-model
right.
runs look like if we excluded a certain amount of development. We could potentially look at that if the board would like to pursue that.
I got to tell you something, we're not paying them another dime. No more money.
Continue
on, Michael.
Okay. Where was I?
We're going to talk about the capital improvement.
Oh, yeah, okay. Thank you. So Lumos and Associates is in the process of compiling our record information, like I had mentioned. We do have a data gap meeting coming up on the 20th to take a look at our CIP info from the based on the timing of our CIP info coming from the Integrated Water Master Plan to the reserve starting balances. So we'll get an updated schedule, hopefully, from that meeting. Okay. But it's really just to update them on the infrastructure that they're going to need so they can make their CIP list so we know what infrastructure is going to hit and what year.
So looking at the fiscal budget calendar, do you think we would have it? We're going to start, obviously, the March, April-ish. We're on timelines in. But do you think we'll have, if not all, a good portion of that information?
When you say information, are you talking about the capital improvement program?
Yeah.
So I think we'll, you know, my best guess is, I'll have a better guess for you.
Okay,
you know,
then don't.
But I think probably sometime in the winter.
Okay.
You know, the problem is the Integrated Water Master Plan is taking a little longer than we'd hoped.
Right, right.
And that there's a significant CIP portion that we may just have to get prior to the Integrated Water Master Plan being published.
Got it.
So.
Okay, thank you. Continue on.
Granley Safety Project, I think we discussed that.
Yep.
Wastewater facility gas to sodium hypochlorite contact tank project. Project alternatives, the capital cost analysis was updated for the various alternatives, including a UV disinfection comparison. The capital cost opinions range from $3.175 million for the upgrade to rehab the existing contact tank and add an extension to the existing tank to get a full 3 MGD capacity, all the way to $4.5 million for the UV upgrade, which roughly $1 million of that is for sodium hypochlorite for pre-DAF treatment. Now, it's my opinion that I don't think we necessarily need the pre-DAF sodium hypochlorite treatment to run a dissolved air flotation unit. It's been my experience. So we're taking a look at that with sampling. Can we run the DAF without sodium hypochlorite? And if we can, and we don't need the sodium hypochlorite with the UV system, the UV is now competitive with the other sodium hypochlorite design scenarios.
Okay.
So that's why I wanted to bring that back before we take that step away from UV completely. We need to evaluate the possibility to have a UV system instead of a chlorine system, which gets us, you know, primarily chemical free as far as
right.
disinfection goes.
Okay.
So that's what we're taking a look at now. That's why I'm having staff do intensive sampling at the wastewater treatment plant so we can get that process design information that we need.
Okay.
Lift stations, no update on 3B, Alameda and Starter Shack, progress in the design phase, no update on that. Cantelba and FAA stations, we will be providing a second easement request for the FAA access so we can get to the lift station and get a generator installed there. Lift 6B, our electrician has recently submitted final comments on the panel design, and we're now awaiting the updated project schedule. So both, yeah. And let's see. I also wanted to mention in this report that we recently had a discussion with the Department of Drinking Water regarding the investigation of requirements to consider the possibility of adding Clementia as a municipal use reservoir. It was a good meeting with the state. I think they understand where we're coming from. And they're going to follow up with us, and then we're going to get together with West Yosin Associates that can providing us with the technical memorandum of the steps that we're going to need to take to evaluate the possibility for that to occur.
Okay.
So that's where we're at with that. On with the development. For Retreats North, four additional meters have been released on October 30th, 2023, for a total of 21 meters that have been released per the terms of the interim security agreement dated August 1st, 2023. A total of 38 meters have been released for Retreats East and North in total. Three more are allowed until September 30th.
Okay, I was just going to ask, we're getting close to that total
yes.
number.
Yes, so we're tracking you. That, and I've talked with front staff, and so we're both on the same page.
Okay. Do you think they're going to have to go above that number?
I don't know. It's going to be their business model. If they do, they're going to have to update the agreement.
Right, because I guess, so Mimi, I would ask we follow up with them because I don't want to get behind the power curve. So if they're thinking they're going to max out, Tony just left, that we start that process probably yesterday. It'll go quicker because we know the process, right, and the expectations. But I would ask that we reach out to them and be forward on this, and then that way we're not that hiccup holding things up. So
I have a meeting scheduled with Tony next Monday, and I can ask him personally.
Perfect. We know better the process, right?
Yeah.
But I don't want us to not be forward on it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Residents of Marietta Hills East and West, we have received and reviewed the initial draft sewer study and met with the developer to discuss this study. The developer will be installing a sewer flow meter sensor at their cost in the district 10-inch main located just southwest of Laguna Joaquin to try and capture some wet weather sewer flow information this winter. We will have access to this data, and I'm going to be working with the developer to make sure that data is that it's installed correctly and the data looks reasonable.
Okay.
We've also received an updated water study from the developer. We're in the process of reviewing that updated water study. Let's see. Like mentioned, we are going to be meeting with Rancho, with Mr. Velez, and discussing some of the recycled water concepts for future Rancho North developments.
Okay.
And that concludes my report, if there's any questions.
Thank you. Board members, any questions? Michael, thank you.
You're welcome.
Very good. Item number 8, review of district meeting dates.
My favorite.
If there are any dates committee members can't make, please work through the district secretary. Item number 9, correspondence. I didn't see any in the packet, so that's refreshing. Item 10, it's an action item. Consider approval resolution R-2023-16, changing authorized user titles to local area investment fund. Mimi, please.
Thank you. Yeah, this is a very basic step in authorizing both Mark and I for access to the local agency investment fund funds that we have on deposit there, just to set us up for good financial management so we have access to all of our accounts. So this resolution includes our names. You might recall that it was on the agenda before, but before we knew who our director of finance and admin
was, we postponed it until now.
Okay. And we're having the resolution because we changed it from director of administration to director of finance and administration.
Right. Somebody didn't like the technicality.
Late.
Okay. Board members, any questions of staff?
No.
Mimi, roll call, please.
No.
Here you are, Ms. Morris.
You need it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll make a motion to adopt resolution 2023-16 is written. Thank you, Randy.
Can we adopt this, or do we need a first reading on this, Council?
This is a resolution, so we should be able.
Because it's not an ordinance, we can approve it?
Yeah. That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
And would someone like to second that for me, please?
Director Jenko did.
Oh, second. Thank you. Thank you, Director Jenko. I didn't know. Roll call, Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Yes.
Director Jenko.
Aye.
Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Cole.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amelia. Item 11 is an action item. Consider augmentation of the fiscal year 23-24 operations water budget amount of $200,000, authorized purchase of both 15 modules and 187 module cassette for water treatment plant 1. For those of us that have read it, that is some great reading. I'll turn it over to staff.
Okay. So this is our water treatment plant number 1, our newest water treatment plant. and it utilizes membranes as the barrier for log4 treatment. As with anything, membranes get old and they become less effective. Membranes work by pressure. You force water through the membrane and it keeps all the bacteria and the viruses on one side and the clean water and on the other. The life cycle for membranes typically are 7 to 10 years, and we've had these in play for since I think 2015. So they're getting towards the end of the useful life. In addition, we've had manganese issues in the past, and in the past we didn't always know how to work with manganese, and so unfortunately a lot of our membranes became manganese stained, which reduced the effectiveness of the membranes. But we've since learned how to better operate our membrane system. But a lot of this replacement is really due to old age. And so we're asking for two things. Our short-term needs, as we've blown through the 15 modules that we purchased last July, and we've replaced all of them, and we need to place 3 more modules moving forward. And then, you know, looking at our long-term needs, because we do track the health of our membrane modules, we have a large membrane map that we keep in Excel showing which modules are bad and which ones aren't. So we feel that it's high time that we order a replacement cassette. And when we take that replacement cassette, we'll put that right into the train, and then we'll pull out the other cassette and we'll take the good modules out of that cassette and replace some of the bad modules in another cassette. So that's the plan. The reason we're asking for that now instead of at budget times, this is a 54-week turnaround. These are shipped over from Europe. They go through Canada. It's easy to get the 15, but it's hard to get the cassettes with everything. So that's why we're asking the board for this roughly $200,000 expenditure, so we can A, get the modules we need to get the ones that are bad replaced, and then B, that we can plan ahead and have that cassette provided to us at some point next. It'll hit next fiscal year by the time the shipping is complete. And, you know, talking to staff recommend that we probably take a look at purchasing a cassette every other year for the next 12 years until they're, you know, most of those are replaced. Every year we'll take a look at our membrane maps, what are our needs, you know, because you need to have enough bad modules in the other trains to do the switchover,
right?
Because there is a shelf life with those membranes.
Thank you. I'll open it up to the board. Any questions? I have a couple. Go ahead.
We talked about this at the improvements committee, and I understand this, you're trying to revise our current budget to allow for this expenditure, but we're not going to have. What you proposed or told us the other day was that to purchase this cassette, that we only have to put 30% down.
Yeah, that's correct.
So why are we putting all this money in this year's budget?
I think that was just the thought to have it paid for.
Yeah. My question comes, is it coming out of reserves because this is a capital improvement, or is this an operating cost that has to be budgeted for annually?
Well, I think I'll leave that to the financial experts, but...
So, Mark, jump in on this. So, on these...
I think you could take it out. You could make a case for both, but I'll defer to...
Mimi was going to chat.
Yeah, I would say you could make a case for either, but since it's... So, here, let me explain my thinking in terms of putting it in this year's budget. What we have found is that this organization does not normally encumber funds in a fiscal year, but it's a mechanism that's used widely elsewhere. Correct. And that way you have the expense captured in a fiscal year, and then you may not spend it all this year. Like, we'll set up a contract with them, we'll pay them the 30% for the initial deposit, but we'll encumber the remaining balance of that. So we know that that's an obligation that we'll have in about a year when we get the membranes, and then we'll pay it then, but we'll pay it out of this budget. And then whether it's operations or capital, I think we were treating it as operations because we're pulling it out of the operations budget.
Like.
Right now, there's some, you know, we're still developing the data about what our reserves include. But I think there are specific rules about what constitutes capital and what constitutes maintenance. And this one, you know, it could be on the border of either, and we'll have to, like, look at it a little bit further and then reassign the cost if we determine it needs to be under a CIP.
Okay. So, because my other question is just give me a line item number, right? And so that's what you're trying to establish moving forward is we have a line item number, because in the past, we need them, we just buy them. So I understand that. Yes, go ahead.
I was just wondering if Mark has any thoughts about this.
Yeah, I mean, I fully agree.
Okay.
On that analysis, you know, and we'll just have to look and see where it's going to fall, capital or operating expense. But it's like a borderline. It's a borderline.
Why would it be a why wouldn't it be a reserve item? Could it not? We're just replacing what's already there.
It could be that, but as far as if it's going to be a capital, like property, plant, and equipment, or if it's going to be just a repair and maintenance expense item. So I don't, was that the question? Or
yeah,
was
it seems to me it's more of a maintenance issue that you need to reserve for having these on hand every year and as a replacement, just like a pickup. But it seems important to put this expenditure in the projections for reserves.
Yeah, I agree. Next year. I agree, but I think once the bean counters decide where we put it, because I mean, because you could treat it as a roll of paper towels, right? It could be a consumable, in theory.
Yeah.
But I think there's probably some kind of a test.
Well, yeah, and there's usually like a threshold, and each individual membrane is. Like way below the, it's usually
right.
Like 5K and is something that's considered an asset.
And life expectancy and all that.
Yeah.
So, Martin, I guess if we move forward with it, I would ask on the condition that staff come back to finance to give their opinion on if it's CIP or out of the general operating budget. I would ask that we approve it and then pay out the minimum 30%. And then once we get better projections, staff tells us it's reserves and or it's not, then we can make a decision once we know further into the year when we have to make it. And as Mamie said, it might be a carryover into that new line item for the next fiscal cycle, even though it came out of this year's budget. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I have a question for Mimi, then related to your suggestion, Tim, and that is if we were to show the encumbrance in this fiscal year, but we only spend a portion of that, then that leaves a GL item open at year-end close. And then that's reconciled in the subsequent fiscal year, theoretically?
Yeah, it's accrued as a liability. And then when the items are received and they're paid for, then we would reverse that liability and mark it as an expense, that the expense would be realized at that point.
So if we were to follow your recommendation, we would be approving the budget augmentation at this time in the full amount, mm-hmm. but we might only be spending a portion of it, leaving the rest encumbered for a later date of completion.
Well, I think it's going to be a contract for the full amount, and then the 30% of that amount is required to initiate the purchase.
So we're actually approving the expenditure as well.
Yeah, of the
200. We just maybe aren't spending it all today.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank
and
you.
I mean, like, you could get into very esoteric arguments about, well, there's, you know, 87 membranes in a cassette, and so, you know, you're not going to use all those membranes in 24, 25. Maybe you'll use some in 25, 26. And you could really try to match the cost with the usage, but really it's kind of like a paper towel.
Yeah, but isn't the concept, Michael, that you'd actually pull a complete cassette and drop the new one in? You're going to replace the modules through the year and some of the cassettes, but isn't the idea of buying a complete cassette that you would just drop a new one in, take an old one out?
Yeah, and in a sense, so we would train one, pull old cassette out, put new cassette in, and then we take the second cassette and train one, and we pull it out, and we take the bad membranes out and put the good ones in from the one we just pulled in and throw the rest away. So they're being put to use, I would say, immediately upon receipt.
So initially it's going to cost us in the ballpark of $60,000, right? Because if they want 30% down, you sign the contract.
Oh, yeah.
So really we're looking at $60,000 as of right now until we figure out it's coming out of operations and or it's coming out of CIP. So
yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah, and we can do adjusting entries to demonstrate.
Martin, does that address?
I don't have any doubt that we need it. It's just a matter of how we're paying for it.
So then I would ask, and staff's heard it from the board, that we just come back to the finance where we think, and then really at the end of the day, Michael, being ahead of this, we now know we have a line item for this. Some years it's heavy, some years it's light, but what's it costing us in cost of doing business? Any other? I'll turn it. Okay. So I'm going to make a motion to accept as written resolution R-2023-17.
We're on item number 11, sir.
Oh, geez, thank you.
It's not a resolution.
I'm going to make a motion to adopt a staff recommendation amount of $200,000 to authorize the purchase of both 15 membranes and the 87 module cassettes. And staff understands what we're looking for coming back to the finance committee. Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Director Janko. If there's no further discussion,
please
roll call vote. Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
As I was saying before,
I'm sorry. I do have more comments.
Please.
I didn't mean to cut you off, sir.
Well, no, it was the calendar that cut you off, John. Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah, come on up.
That way I can capture you on the recording.
Michael,
the $200,000 that we're buying the cassettes and the modules.
And CDs.
And CDs. And DVDs.
Exactly. We're getting a little bit.
It's right up your alley, John.
How does that translate in terms of that physical equipment to what we're holding the $540,000 for, to increase capacity for the developer? I'm just trying to understand cassettes, modules. We took $540,000 of his money.
Correct.
To buy that additional processing capacity as it became necessary to bring it online. So I'm wondering, in the $200,000 that you're buying parts with, are these the same parts, cassettes, modules, that we would buy to increase the capacity in the second phase of the financing and services agreement?
I think that's a simplistic way to look at it, but I think the general thought was, at the time of the first upgrade, that part of the reason they went with the membranes is their four log removal, so it's very good. It's the newest technology at the time, and the other part is the ability to increase capacity for a reasonably lower cost.
Right. That's essentially you're kind of restating my question in that.
I was getting to
First of all, in the first phase, okay, which was executed in 2014, okay, we should be well through that based on the fact that we're now in the 10th year with no development, okay? So my first part of that question is, in light of the fact that we have placed demands on our water plant at this point for the hotel and the shopping center and Murrieta Gardens and retreats, I was wondering if it's time to look through that and maybe capture some of that 2,000 or in the next go around when you buy the stuff next year. I mean, we're looking at $540,000. You're now going to spend $200,000. He may not get to the second phase of demand until the end to 2030. So that $500,000 at that point is going to cost you $1.5 million to replace.
Well, I'll add that the current capacity that we have is phase one capacity.
Right.
There's been no additional phase two capacity. So the deposit has not gone towards anything. I mean,
I know it hasn't.
In order to increase that capacity, we have two things going on, and it's important to think about both things. The first thing is plant number two is getting old, and it's going to either need to be rebuilt or it's needing to be converted to membrane capacity to one train. And in order to, so that's the first thing. As far as the capacity goes, to get any additional capacity for plant one, from my understanding, is we have to add additional membrane trains to get to that capacity.
Correct.
In order to do that, it's not just plop in a membrane train. There's piping that needs to occur. There's engineering that needs to occur. And then I'm pushing for addressing manganese as well with that. Phase two absolutely has to address manganese, because you do not have complete capacity until you remove manganese prior to it getting to the membranes. Manganese causes membrane staining. When we have manganese outbreaks, we switch plant one off and we run plant two.
Yeah, I know.
Right. So that the manganese needs to be addressed, and the Cal Poly students are going to take the first crack at looking at manganese.
Yeah, but here's I just want to back up to the membranes.
Okay,
again.
Okay. Here's
that answer.
Right.
I'm not getting that answer.
Right. Here's how I think you're going to get the answer. Is as staff works this backwards, is it an operational issue or is it a CIP? I think once we answer that question, then the next comes in, was this an upgrade or is this just operational costs? So I understand your question. We're not going to solve it here. Staff has to determine, is it operational costs they wear out or is it a CIP type of issue? Then we can start working back to what your question is, but we're not going to get to it.
No, and I understand that.
Michael understands
I actually view it, and maybe I misunderstand the discussion, but I view it as a bit different question, and that is it to maintain current production and meet current demand?
Yes.
Or is it perceived to be an expansion or augmentation of production?
Right. It's currently today what we're doing. I understand you're saying, okay, we've added all these other things. And then did we tap into that 540?
No, we didn't.
Correct. Right. And so that's that capacity issue.
For Andrew, if I may.
Sure.
So we would not tap into that 540 unless there was a decision made to expand production, correct?
To be clear, a decision by the developer and a request with right. 1 year's advance notice to the district to tap into the additional capacity.
I'm building all of this, and I'm going to need this additional water. We would have to expand the plant or expand production.
The cost of that expansion would be on the developer. The $540K would be applied towards that cost, but the cost would be on the developer.
Okay. And it's sounding like that's not nearly enough money. I don't know if there's anything you'll ever be able to do about it. Incidentally, if you go back into your 2015 reserves, they did establish reserves on 10 modules in there that belong to the district. And I don't know whether they continued to reserve for it. It got lost with all the other reserve stuff that we did, but it was in there.
Okay.
And it was treated in those days when the plant was approved as a reserve item.
Okay.
And that's at the same time we took the 540 from the developer, which for several years we couldn't find.
I think that was the point you made at the improvements committee, wasn't it? That you thought there was reserve money set aside?
Okay, so it passed, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So then we just have background work to clarify back to the board where we...
How we're going to fund it.
The nature of the...
Right, where it's going to come. And we've established ongoing line item number. Maybe I'm now going to go to item 12, which is resolution 2023-17, declaring certain property exempt surplus under the Surplus Lands Act.
That's
which I believe is going to be Mr. Ramos.
It is, yes, yes. Mr. Ramos.
Thank you, Director Mabee. This is an exciting night because this is the most I've ever heard about manganese in my life. Never heard.
I thought it was exciting.
Never dealt with
it.
And because of the wooden bridge. That's the other reason.
Brown water shows up in your sink. It's pretty exciting.
So, directors, this is, I would say this is a long overdue step towards transferring the pedestrian bridge to RMA. So at some point, thinking kind of backwards in the process, an agreement will come to you for approval that will actually make the transfer of the bridge site to RMA. This is just a first step in the process. And Amelia, I don't know if you had a chance to pull up the email I recently sent, but we can take a look at the bridge site. This will help us to understand what we're talking about. We're talking about the real property that underlies the bridge. And Amelia, if you could go to the final page, we'll actually see a little plat map of it. But the action tonight that you're being asked to consider is adopting a resolution finding that this property is exempt from the Surplus Land Act. What is the Surplus Land Act? It's an state law that requires when public property is going to be disposed of that it first, if not exempt from the act, be considered for affordable housing. Property that is may be exempt for one of many reasons, including in this case that it is not suitable for affordable housing because there's a bridge on it, is exempt from the act, and your actions end tonight under the Surplus Lands Act with finding
and that's
that
your
exempt.
Final opinion on this.
And, okay. And it is.
That's fine. I'll accept it.
It is not suitable for affordable housing because of the existence of the bridge and, more importantly, the easements that go along with the bridge allowing the public to pass over it. So that would be your action tonight. The proposed action is to adopt a resolution finding that the property is exempt from the Surplus Land Act. There are no other actions or legal ramifications of this decision other than we will send a copy of your resolution to the Housing and Community Development Department, which is the state agency that administers this law. And then following this action, we will work towards actually making the transfer happen at a future date.
Is this what's commonly called the wooden bridge, or is this a different bridge?
No, that's a wooden bridge.
Wooden bridge.
Okay.
Some will even say the rickety old bridge, but just...
Well, it sounds great when you drive the golf cart across.
Oh, I love it. Any questions of legal counsel?
Back to this page.
Amelia, I'm going to make a motion that we adopt resolution R-2023-17. If I could have a second.
I'll second.
I'll let Director Booth second because he hasn't seconded anything yet. If there's no further discussion, roll call vote. Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Wolf.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amelia. Item number 13, public comments. Three minutes on anything not on the agenda. Anybody at all? Do I see anybody that wants to come up and talk?
No,
is there
you don't.
Any?
I'll read this very quickly. This is from the January 2016 board meeting minutes. And it was the night that they approved the 2016 water supply assessment. And it states in here that John Merchant asked if this report is guaranteeing that the district will provide water in the future. Richard Shanahan stated that this report does not guarantee anything It just states that the current time, under the current conditions, the district can provide water. The board does have the authority to make changes as needed. And the last sentence, which I consider to be the most important, is the commitment to provide water is made when a permit is issued. So I just wanted Andrew to have this, and I'd really like at some point to understand how that relates to what we say about the financing and services agreement, because from what Dick was saying in 2016, the last sentence is pretty interesting.
Okay.
Thanks.
No, thank you, John. Do you have any names in the hat?
That was the only name in the hat.
Okay, moving on to item 14, director comments, suggestions. I'm going to say Director Booth, Director Butler.
Yes. I didn't know what the appropriate time was to do this, so I'm going to do it under director comments. I'm looking at the, don't everybody get all excited here, but the November 2023 pipeline. And there was, I think, some misinformation in this. It says filling the reservoirs. The Cosumnes River is the source of water for the community. The district diverts water into all three storage reservoirs, which, as I understand it, is not accurate, for the water treatment plants to process into drinking water for the community use. So I think that's misleading. I don't know whatever's going to happen with the Integrated Water Master Plan, but right now we do not divert water for drinking purposes into all three reservoirs. Is that right?
Yeah, you're technically correct. We do not currently take water from Clementia for the drinking water, but we do divert to all three reservoirs from the Cosumnes.
Not for drinking water.
Correct, like I just stated. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're technically correct that we do not provide drinking water from all three reservoirs.
Correct. So I think don't get confused about that as we go forward. I did also want to read the California Department of Public Health. This was in relation to the 2010 Integrated Water Master Plan, just to kind of make this a little clearer. It says, and this is the Division of Drinking Water and Environmental Management. The IWMPU also appears to include all three reservoirs as permitted sources of drinking water. This is incorrect. Clementia is not presently authorized to be used as a source of public drinking water. If RMCSD wishes to have it considered as such, then body contact recreation would most likely have to be prohibited. So nothing's changed since this. So that's
correct.
The where it is. Okay. Thank you.
Perfect. I'm going back to you.
Thank you. I'm sorry I had to step out of the room for a moment. I'm assuming that Mr. Merchant's last comment was not directly addressed.
It's going to be addressed in the process.
Okay, and the reason I ask is, at the town hall meeting, Mr. Van Doren raised a question about legal obligations, and we made a commitment at that meeting that we would have that researched and provide a response. And so I think that's consistent with what Mr. Merchant just read to us. Do we have a time frame for when we might...
Did you commit or anything on that?
No.
When they asked, did you say we can get it next month? Or
no, I did not. I just indicated that there was an attempt by Mr. Van Doren to engage Mr. Fritchie and others in a discussion, which I decided was more complex than should be handled at that meeting.
Good.
Making eye contact with counsel, he seemed to agree with that consideration, and we simply committed that we would provide a response.
Perfect.
And address that issue in the future. We didn't specify a time frame, no.
Then what I would ask, working back through the GM and legal counsel, once you opine on your opinion, that'll go to the board, and then we'll give you direction
because if we have to have some discussion on legal, we can either get it on the next closed session, or so that's kind of my time frame. That'll fall in what we need for the integrated water master plan.
And on kind of a secondary issue, Mr. Van Doren started his comments with a complaint that he had attempted to address his questions directly to Mr. Ramos, and that you had responded that that was inappropriate. I echoed that determination and said that was absolutely correct, that it's up to the board to engage our counsel for legal matters. He wasn't very happy with that, but
that's why I send you out there.
Yeah, no, that's good. I got broad shoulders.
Yep.
And thick skin.
So we're on 14, director's comment.
Nothing else for me.
Okay. Director Janko.
I don't have anything.
Thank you. Director Pohl.
No.
As always, I have something. Along the lines of what Director Booth said, and this goes to all staff, but Michael, thank you for coming up to me the other day. I just, and Mark as the new guy here, we can't take it personal. Some people see that attacking staff, demanding answers, expecting certain things is how they conduct their lives. It's the board's responsibility to take those hits. With that, I just implore upon staff, don't take it personal. We've crested the wave. We're getting there. It's taken a toll on everybody, and I understand that. And, you know, Kelly, as we have conversations, all I do is just take everything away from you. And I apologize for that. You heard a resident demand otherwise, and I wish I could provide otherwise. With that, we're starting the holiday season. To the board and to staff, just be blessed for the upcoming Thanksgiving. And believe it or not, after the holidays, this stuff will still be here. with that, I make a motion to adjourn. Can I have a second?
Second. Thank you, Director Mabee. Thank you, Director Butler. Roll call vote. Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Butler. Director Butler.
Oh, I'm sorry. Aye. My brain has gone.
Director Janko.
Aye. You already checked out.
I already
Director
checked
Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
Amelia, thank you.
Mm-hmm.